Have you ever had a fantastic experience with healthcare? What about a not so great one? Well, here at the Alinea Life Podcast, we're going to talk about it. The Alinea Life Podcast, a production of the Alinea Collective, exists to be a public resource to you, the listener, who at some point or another has been a patient of this crazy thing we call the healthcare system. Co-hosts and doctors of physical therapy, William Mills and Joey Rosie, interview experts in the fields of physical rehabilitation, fitness, and medicine, as well as the athletes and patients, on their experiences with the good, the bad, and the ugly of healthcare. I was happy with that one.
The topics discussed in this podcast should not be considered medical advice or a means of diagnosis. If you're in need of medical attention or advice, seek a licensed healthcare professional. The conversations in the Alinea Life Podcast are intended for adult audiences only. And though we keep most topics professional, there is occasional strong language.
So today we're going to be talking with Dr. Brett Scott. Brett is a physical therapist. He's a strength coach. He's actually currently programming for Olympic weightlifting for me specifically. And he has a pretty interesting story with his experience with healthcare. He has ankylosing spondylitis, and he's also a weightlifter. So I'm going to let him kind of give a background story of when he got diagnosed and how that's kind of played into his training.
Yeah. So thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
So do we want the long story here of how this all happened and how we ended up here?
Yeah. Do it. Yeah. Send it.
So back when I was 21, I was in exercise physiology school. I was a junior and I was working in the PT clinic at the time too. And I was training pretty hard and stuff. And then, over the summer, I started to get some shoulder pain, started just doing some conservative PT there, got a little better. As soon as I like stopped putting all my time into rehab and tried to get back to like some bodybuilding stuff, what I was doing at the time, things got worse again and got inflamed and all this and went back, did some more PT. And then it really wasn't getting much better. Had an MRI, had to go see, she sent me to an orthopedic surgeon. So had the MRI that came back. It's like, yeah, it's just super inflamed in there. Like there's nothing.
Of your shoulder?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was my left shoulder. So it's like nothing looks wrong besides there's just a ton of inflammation in there. So we're going to give you Voltaren, which is like typically for like 70-year-olds with arthritis that like rub on anti-inflammatory NSAID cream.
Yeah.
So then I just kind of went about things. I was just kind of annoyed at that point. Then like within a month, my hip started bothering me. So now I'm in PT as an employee and a patient getting my shoulder and my hip worked on. And did that for about a month. The hip was doing okay, but I wasn't really doing a lot either. And all of a sudden one day I came in, I was like, hey, Kelly, who is my boss and the head PT there. I was like, today it's not my left hip, it's my right hip that hurts. And she's like, whoa, something's wrong. She's like, you're 21, you're supposed to be relatively healthy. Like, you're pretty smart about your training. Like, you know how to rehab people. Like, I don't think you're just like overdoing it and killing yourself in the gym. So yeah. Why don't you go see like a rheumatology specialist? So
solid referral.
Yeah. So I went to a rheumatologist, and this is when my bad experiences with healthcare started. So
let us know.
So I walk in and the secretary, who is very friendly, warns me. She's like, I just want to let you know that, the doctor that you're going to be seeing, she's a little weird. She won't really look you in the eyes. She's like, but she's awesome. Like, she's found people that have cancer and stuff. I'm like, okay. So this doctor was 2 hours late for my appointment. Comes in and the woman is right. She's like, doesn't look me in the eyes, won't look at me, just kind of looks down at her pen and paper the whole time or her computer.
I was about to say pen and paper.
And then basically
90s.
and then like looks at my all she did, she looks at my joints, she bends my elbows, and then has me bend down to touch my toes, and then side bend side to side, and says, "Okay, you look fine. You must be overtraining. Why don't you go see our stretch therapist?" I was like, okay, I'll pass. I'll just go stretch myself. So,
did she ask you about like, what have you been doing? What was your prior symptoms? Like, did y'all talk?
Yeah. Yeah. And they still kind of just knocked it up as like, you must be hitting the gym too hard. 'Cause they did all my blood work too. Okay. They took like 8 vials of blood from me, and then,
but that was the same day, so they probably didn't even run the test yet.
Yeah, so they were like, "We'll come back for a follow-up." So I went back for my follow-up. Okay. And they're like, they go through the blood panels with me, and like, "Yeah, this is good, this is good, this is good." They're like, "This one got put in the wrong tube, but there's no chance you have that. This is good, this is good, this is good." They're like, "You're pretty much fine." It's like, okay. So then I leave. A month later, I'm sitting in pharmacology class. Now, things are progressively getting worse at this point. So now I'm at the point where I can't squat, I can't overhead press, I can't bench press, I can barely deadlift. I could do a mean RDL for a little bit. Nice. And even that started to bother me. It got to the point where I was doing bicep curls, and every time I did, my thoracic spine would pop all the way up and down. Oh my. It was almost like I was scared to do just about anything.
And you're in pharmacology in PT school at this point?
This is an exercise phys still. So this is an undergrad. This is junior year undergrad.
Okay.
So now, so then I stopped PT. The PT is like, "Why don't you try chiropractic? Go see a chiropractor next door." He's trying to crack me. And nothing's getting better. He's like, "No, just give it time. And that I stopped doing that. And,
did you go see the stretch therapist?
No. So then about a month later, I'm sitting in pharmacology now, and we're talking about, and I'm like, "What is going on?" Like, I'm trying to do research, figure things out, whatever. And because no one's giving me answers. So we're sitting in pharmacology, and we go across the DMARD drugs. So the disease modifying anti-rheumatic drugs.
Yeah.
And we go through some of the conditions that they use to treat them. So they were talking about like Enbrel and Humira and some of those biologic drugs.
Yeah.
And he discussed this rare disease that's kind of on the rise in North America, ankylosing spondylitis. And he described the symptoms of SI joint pain, anterior hip pain, can be shoulder pain. And I had two friends that I was really close with in school, and I kind of was like, boom, that's me to a T. And they're like, "Yeah, that sounds exactly like what you've been going through." And because then other things were starting to hurt as well. So I called the doctor. I'm like, "Yeah, so that one blood test we missed, was that HLA?"
This is the rheumatologist you called.
Yeah, I called the rheumatologist. He's like, "Was that one blood panel we missed, or you put in the wrong tube?" I was like, "Was that the HLA B27, which is the antigen they test for ankylosing spondylitis?" And she's like, "Right. Yeah. That's why are you asking me this?" I'm like, "Let's retest me for it because I think I have it." So they retest me. They somehow messed it up again and put it in the wrong tube or something. They've lost it. I don't know. So finally, by the third time, they test it and they call me and like, "Yeah, you were right. Like, you are positive. You do have the gene for ankylosing spondylitis. And based on your symptoms, you know, you pretty much have it." And they're like, "You at this point should stop lifting weights, and you should you shouldn't lift anything more than your body weight, and you should just do yoga and come see our stretch therapist."
So she was on point right away.
Huh? Yeah.
I said she was on point right away.
Yeah. So
how'd that make you feel?
That was horrible.
What was your initial, like, is she looking you in the eye at this point, or?
No, they just called me over the phone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay.
So, and, did you get, like, a sinking feeling of, like, wow, these people don't want me to lift, but I'm still probably going to lift?
Yeah, it was tough because at that point, too, they had already put me on a medication. And That was another big issue I had, was they didn't tell me the severe side effects when you first go on the drug. So I'm on and still currently on this drug called hydroxychloroquine, or like the generic name is Plaquenil, which is actually, it's a disease modifying drug. It's not a biologic. It's actually like an anti-malarial drug that does treat some arthritises as well. Okay. So, but they didn't tell me that I was going to have an upset stomach or like chronic bathroom issues for like the first 3 weeks of taking the drug.
Yeah.
So I just like, there was like 3 days of taking it, I was like, I can't even like go to work. And they're like, oh, why? I'm like, well, like this is doing this. Like, and they also didn't tell me that it was going to take over 3 months for the drug to actually start working. It's a very slow acting drug. So they give it like 3 weeks, because I had gone on for like a week. I was like, this is too much. Stopped. And then after actually being educated on what I was taking, I decided to go on it, and it's actually helped a lot now. But yeah, that point in time when it was like, oh, like I want to make a career as like a strength coach and a therapist, and I'm a junior in college. Like, do I even go through with this? Because they're basically telling me I'm going to be like weak and fragile for the rest of my life.
Right.
When you're told not to do something that you really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was definitely a place where it was like, should I go to physical therapy school if like I'm going to walk around with this curved spine and be this hunched over man at 50 years old? One second here. What is all that background noise?
I don't know what
that might be. Mine.
Yeah.
Mute your mic, Joseph.
So we got, it was really a tough point where I was like, okay, what do I do? And I didn't stop.
Yeah.
But there was definitely that whole like pain science thing of like, and you know, they definitely got into my head too. Like, hey, you shouldn't be doing this because, you know, you have this disease that's chronically degenerating all your joints at this point, and everything is inflamed. And at that point, I started getting, I don't know why, probably a horrible, or what looks like a horrible idea is, let's start trying Olympic weightlifting, like within a few months.
So you hadn't been Olympic weightlifting yet?
No, I was messing around before with like powerlifting a little bit and more bodybuilding type stuff, and I was just kind of getting bored. But
yeah,
can
you give a little bit more of a background on what exactly ankylosing spondylitis is?
Yeah, so ankylosing spondylitis is considered a rheumatoid autoimmune disorder, where
it affects your whole body.
It can. Typically, it affects mainly the spine, mainly the thoracic spine. So you're getting that degeneration and that bent forward spine. So yeah, you'll see those really old men and women like really crouched over where they're cranking their neck up just to see.
Right.
So it's one of those. It can also affect the more proximal joints like the shoulder and the hips mainly. And then like in the beginning when I wasn't on any drugs, I was getting like ankle, knee, wrist, elbow pain. So there was a point in time that like just I couldn't do basically anything.
Yeah.
And it was, you're torn because it's like, well, I don't want to give up what I'm doing. And I'm the type of person too that if someone tells me I can't do something, I need to do it 110% better than anyone could think I could do it.
Yeah.
So, what happened was the medication started to work over time. And then I was just like, I would do like an hour at least a day of just like foam rolling and stuff, because back then that was, you know, was that almost 8 years ago now? Or you're
getting supple.
Yeah, I was doing the supple stuff to you know, be ready to go and be able to work out, but I almost needed it at that point because my body was just so stiff and it was just like, it did free up a lot of movement at the time. And now, you know, I don't do a lot of that stuff anymore based on what we know, but five years ago, the foam roller was the thing to be doing.
Yeah.
and then any crazy contraption you could set up. So,
whenever ankylosing spondylitis was presented to me in physical therapy school, it was called bamboo spine.
Yep.
Like, and I'll never forget it because it was called bamboo spine. I was like, well, your spine is really strong. And the way that they're presenting it is like your vertebrae, your bones and your back become super brittle, rigid, and hard. And you can't really stop the process. But what you can do is help the person, like when it fuses, and they said it was going to fuse. I don't know if that's current best research, because it was a couple years ago. But the big thing that we learned in treatment of it, or behavior change for that patient, is make sure they're upright most of the time. Is that what you were told?
Yeah, I was told, well, the rheumatologist told me that I should be sleeping on my stomach, that I should stretch, and maybe do yoga.
Okay.
Those were my recommendations, and to stop lifting and strengthening. I don't know if that was a naivety thing or what they thought was the best clinical management at the time.
Yeah.
Things have changed in the past few years, but that's what I was told by the rheumatologist. And then in school, when we reviewed it in school, it was more of, yes, extension-based exercises are good. Try to be upright as possible. Really working on that thoracic mobility and management there.
And does that help you?
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, like, I do my best to maintain what I have. Like, I definitely probably have some degeneration at this point.
Yeah.
Which is okay. Like, I'm PRing my snatch every week now. So, like, it's not the end of the world for me.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, like, if I don't do some, like, I do use like a peanut, and I go over my spine like pretty much every day. Try to just roll and self-manipulate that. I do thoracic rotations, thoracic whips, stuff like that. And yeah, so if I keep at that stuff, like, I stay relatively well, but, you know, there are days where I don't do it and I'm still fine. Like, I think I have a more mild case of AS, where I've seen and heard some people are pretty severe at my age already.
Yeah.
So I'm fortunate in that end, but at the same time, I don't know if that's because of what I did, because, and looking back, even as things were getting better, I was still super stiff all the time, and I was just bodybuilding and powerlifting a little bit and trying to get through school and stuff. So it wasn't till like a year after that when I got into weightlifting, because I was actually dating a girl that was like a strength and conditioning coach at the time, and she could do all these cool moves and stuff. I was like, shit, like, I need to learn how to do this stuff. And once I kind of started to figure out how to front rack and do cleans a little better and stuff, I was like, I was getting hooked, but I was in pain every day, but I just wanted to learn how to do it. Like, it was a new movement, something I wanted to be able to coach as well, to be a better strength coach. And
didn't want her showing you up.
Yeah. And so, like, I put myself through a lot of pain for like a couple years, like, A, not knowing all the technical side of it that I do now.
Yeah. And just,
like, having to, like, do so much, like, mobility stuff. Like, it would take me, like, an hour before I could get into, like, an overhead squat. And even then, it was a garbage overhead squat, where I think just time and adaptation, things have improved a lot just based on, like, motor skill acquisition and stuff. So now I'm in a completely different place where it doesn't take me that long and stuff. And I think it's just – I think weightlifting is actually one of the best things I could have done for myself, because it is an extension-based movement that forces me to be upright.
Right.
And forces you basically to end range of your thoracic spine every day, and, you know, lumbar and hips. So now my training is kind of my rehab, because that's like my maintenance of what I need to do. And that forces me to make sure I have all the mobility, because if I don't, I can't do the lifts.
Right. So it's a good It's a good, I would think of that as like a self-check, you know?
Yeah, it basically is. And something, you know, they told me never lift more than my body weight off the floor. And now I'm taking that and I'm putting that overhead on a daily basis, which is pretty cool. And that was like the end goal, was like, all I want to do is one snatch at more than body weight just to prove someone wrong.
So you could send them the video.
Yeah. I know I'm doing that even more, but yeah, it's definitely become a point of like, because if I just did bodybuilding, I wouldn't need to do all this stuff, and I'd probably be a lot tighter in, you know, just like any bodybuilder typically is. Like, they don't need to do the mobility stuff, so they're not. But I think at this point, the weightlifting, as much as someone told me it's not going to help, it has helped me in the aspect of, yeah, the, here's your daily self-check. Like, make sure you're doing your mobility stuff and the right warm-ups and resets and stuff there to keep everything maintained. And yeah. I actually almost feel better as I progress with age now. And I think a lot of that too comes down to learning more of this biopsychosocial model.
Yeah.
Cause we weren't preached that at all in school, and like behavior change wasn't even a thing. So it was like all through school, I think was probably when I hurt the most, because, and I was kind of the black sheep too, where it was like, oh, here's this crazy strength coach that's doing all these crazy movements and putting things overhead, and we think overhead lifting is bad for most people and this and that, and you know, you can't pass the impingement test or the O'Brien's test or whatever, the Hawkins Kennedy, like you shouldn't be overhead lifting, or the Nears test, whatever.
Yeah,
like you shouldn't do this, you know, everyone in my class and my professors are like, you know, what are you doing, this is wrong.
Yeah.
And
so we talk a lot about the biopsychosocial model on the podcast. I think it probably comes up like every episode, but for those who might have forgot, it's basically just a model of how we communicate with patients as healthcare providers that kind of encompasses all of the person. So the biological aspects, the spine, the shoulder, the hip, how they feel about it, and then how that affects their daily life. So it's sound, but what I find interesting is, you know, we talk a lot in the PT world about how the pendulum can kind of swing, or tends to swing, one way or the other in terms of the bio versus the psychosocial. But I find that it's interesting, like how you talk and approach your self-treatment with ankylosing spondylitis, because it's very much a bio-related thing. Like, it's a rheumatological disease and it affects your joints. So how do you, I guess, how do you make sure, Joey, I was getting feedback from you, so it's fine. How do you manage, like, how do you manage the pendulum in your own mind? Like, for instance, you said before, like everything was super inflamed. I've kind of gotten triggered about that word recently, like, because people want to blame a problem that they've had on for like 6 months on inflammation in their shoulder. And that, I would say that's a very biological way of looking at pain. But you actually have inflammation that's being pharmacologically managed. How do you navigate that, as well as like, how would you explain that to a patient if they had inflammation versus if they didn't?
Yeah, so I think the big thing for me looking at all this was, before it was like, and before I had a lot of fear, before I knew about all this biocycle social stuff that was coming out, and kind of wasn't until I got out of PT school where I started looking at all this kind of new data and stuff people were talking about. So for me, like, basically weightlifting every day was like I was like, I'm just waiting. Like, I love this sport, so I'm going to keep doing it. But I'm just, like, waiting for a disc to blow out and me, like, go down and not be able to get off the floor. Or, like, something to just go horribly bad. Because, yeah, it's an inflammatory disease. And but now, learning about all this stuff and, like, right, like, hey, like, degeneration is not correlated to pain, and inflammatory levels aren't necessarily correlated to pain, and posture isn't related to pain. It's like, oh, like, hey, I can kind of almost talk myself out of some of my pains and just tell myself, like, hey, you can do this, you're fine.
Yeah.
Like, little shoulder pain today, no problem. Like, you could be better tomorrow. And I think a lot of that too was stress related with being in PT school and stuff. And now that I'm done with that and I have a better understanding of the model, I just have a lot less pain in general. Uh-huh. You know, I'm still at the point where I have days where my hips feel like garbage. My shoulders don't recover super fast. So my workout is a lot different from most people's, just cause I have to kind of train around some things. So like, I'm pretty sure I have some bony impingement in both my hips now. So I squat like a weird little duck. I'm never going to get my feet wide on a snatch or a clean and jerk. They're pretty narrow, pretty externally rotated. I have like maybe 5 degrees of internal rotation. But I make it work. Wow. I do what I can. So, and it's just a matter of managing like that recovery time and trying to not get banged up too hard. Because I've done that before. So, and it takes a long time for me to kind of recover from that. But as far as the inflammatory, like, biological thing goes, yeah, it is managed pharmacologically now. And I think there definitely is something to be said for the fact that maybe someone like me would have a little bit more pain because of that. But that's not the sole reason for our pain. Like, there's a bunch that goes into that. And like I said, like, just my understanding alone of how things have changed for me and my understanding after school, things are a lot better now.
Yeah.
And
so this is what you tell yourself.
Yeah. And then the other thing too, we know about pain and inflammation is that inflammation doesn't necessarily cause pain, but inflammation is a driver for the sensitivity of pain. So it lowers our threshold for pain. So
and what does that do from a practical standpoint?
So from like an overall stress standpoint, so if we look at our life like a cup and we have all of our life stressors, whether that be physical, mental, emotional stress, work life, whatever, all those things are filling our cup. And if any one of those stressors is increased and I have inflammation, I'm at more of a likelihood to feel pain. Whereas if maybe I had all those same stressors and I didn't have that psychological or physiological state of inflammation, maybe I wouldn't feel that pain. So just managing and coping with life stressors for me is a lot more important, I think, now. Which I try to do pretty well, and A, just not let my degenerative spine get in my head.
Right.
But it's just more of an understanding of, well, yeah, you have some inflammation. So yeah, your shoulder might hurt a little bit today when you're working out. However, that pain doesn't necessarily mean that I am breaking anything.
Right.
So it's kind of me at this point, it's having gotten over that fear of, just because I feel pain, you know, it doesn't mean I'm crushing my joints or anything at this moment in time. It's just, and if degeneration and stuff doesn't lead to pain, mm-hmm. then I'm good. You know, I might not be the most functional, and I hate that word, but people see it as that, but like the most functional athlete, like, yeah, I'm a little forward tilted through my snatch because my thoracic spine lacks a little bit of extension. Mm-hmm. You know, my feet don't go out as far because I lack internal rotation in my hips.
Right.
So it's just a matter of But at the same time, like, I've improved a lot of my mobility and stuff just from doing it over and over and over again and learning to tolerate it.
Sup, pup?
Yeah, Jax is getting in the way here. Sit. So, you know, that's definitely something that has kind of changed the way I look at things.
Yeah.
Is just, like, understanding that, yeah, I have this biological possible inflammatory levels and stuff, but... And that can cause pain, but that doesn't necessarily mean much to me as far as like what I can do or can't do,
right?
Functionally.
So that has kind of led you to the understanding that, like, from a biological standpoint, from a functional standpoint, like, your mobility can only improve so much. So, like, have you stopped chasing the mobility unicorn, like, in the ever pursuit of having all perfect ranges of motion in your joints?
Yeah, so the whole movement unicorn thing is something that I have changed my outlook on, and I still do mobility work because for me there is that biological process of, hey, things are getting... Because, like, my body will produce more tissue necrosis factor.
Yeah.
Which actually, like, is tied into the fascia, so it does restrict the fascia more. So, like, the results I actually...
Is that AS related?
Yes.
Like, that's a thing, that AS.
Yeah. So ankylosing spondylitis, you produce more of tissue necrosis factor, which basically builds up kind of, like, for what most people would consider, like, scar tissue in your body. At a faster rate than normal. So on the bright side for me, like, IASTM or Graston technique works amazingly well for me. Like, I get amazing changes in range of motion whenever I do it, which is nice and kind of gives you hope that, you know, some of this is, you know, there is a physical component to it just as well as the mental and emotional stuff. But at this point, right. I'm not doing mobility work to keep my joints or anything healthy. I'm doing mobility work now so that I can perform and lift weights at the best of my ability.
In order to
boost performance. It's not, oh, I need to foam roll so that my hip doesn't become necrotic or anything like that. It's just like, and I don't do nearly as much foam rolling anymore. I think at this point, because I've been doing the sport a lot more technically now, and there's 5 years of training under my belt now, that
right.
A lot of those motor patterns I've acquired and, like, really tied down, where as before they probably weren't as ingrained. So I think just from having better motor skills, I don't have to do as much of that, and I don't do as much of that anymore. But if I do any mobility stuff, it's not for pain, it's for performance. Because we know mobility doesn't cause pain.
Yeah.
You know, and it's more of, yeah, it's more of just keeping your nervous system safe.
So, Brett, I had some questions for you, actually.
Yep.
I have a guy right now who potentially thinks that he has AS, and he's setting up an appointment with a rheumatologist. So he's going to have this appointment soon. I personally don't think that's necessarily it. He doesn't really fit all of that criteria. I mean, he has some SI joint pain, no hip pain, very mobile, doesn't feel tight, doesn't really have many restrictions. It's just literally has SI joint pain. And in, you know, he got online and found that, you know, there was something online that said, hey, if you have SI joint pain, that, you know, there's a chance he has this. Well, he actually started having a little bit of shoulder pain too. So, but very, very mild with that. So he got online. He's like, I think I have this. I'm setting up an appointment with a rheumatologist. So I'm like, okay. But on the end that it comes back of that is it, what would you have any recommendations for me on how to help him?
I would say a lot of it, looking back at how I've kind of dealt with it, it is a lot of just working through pain, learning to tolerate pain. And, you know, there's, if it truly is ankylosing spondylitis, there will be, you know, mobility restrictions through every part of your body and stuff. And I think a lot of it now, looking back, is like, and you know, you might not change this guy's life within 2 days of like doing any magical manual therapy or anything on him. It's going to be more understanding long-term what all that stuff means, as far as understanding the biopsychosocial, what pain really is, how we perceive it, and just doing a ton of education on that stuff. And then doing probably more of the simple stuff to keep them as mobile as we can, or showing them what things they need to do for like daily maintenance. And because like you could go down so many rabbit holes of like dysfunction. Like for a while, like I was being seen for just about everything by my physical therapist. And it comes down to a point where it's like, I don't even have this much time in the day. Like I could spend my whole day on a foam roller if I wanted to, but that's not, you know, that might make me move better for a couple hours, but you know, tops, but that's not doing anything for pain management. It's, and then, you know, you go online and you hear all these horror stories that people have. So that's my other big thing, is don't go online and read all the forums and the horror stories that people have, because it's really just the people at home that are sitting there with nothing better to do than put their stories out there to people of, you know, how much they're suffering behind a computer. Yeah, I think some of the others that, you know, are living with it and dealing with it probably aren't doing that. Like I, you know, I'm not doing that. You know, it's like, you know, you can have pain and deal with it and still live your life, or you can let it take you over. And I chose to tell, just basically to prove someone wrong that I could lift weight over my head. And now I'm doing it on a daily basis. And, you know, there wasn't like, I didn't feel great every day I did it, but I just did it because I loved it. And I didn't let what someone told me, based on, I think, some naivety still within the medical model of what they thought was going on, you know, physically or physiologically, interfere with my quality of life or what participation things I wanted to do, things like that.
Have you noticed that you've had to really like adapt your training technique for doing the snatch, clean and jerk? Other than, I know you mentioned you really externally rotate your hips and keep them more narrow.
Yeah, so I've found with me that I can't necessarily tolerate a ton of volume or intensity too long. There's certain exercises I just can't do, like behind the neck push jerks, like just always tend to irritate my shoulder. I think it's because my thoracic spine is just super, super locked up most of the time. Which is okay. It's just, let's do behind the neck split jerks instead. Things like that. So I do a lot of auto-regulatory things now, for that, and just kind of based on feel for the day. So I never go into my training with like a set number I need to hit, where I was working with a coach before that. It was like, okay, here are the numbers you need to hit today. And if you don't hit, you're not performing. That was very stressful to me. And now I have a new coach I've been working with for the past few months, and it's just a different system. It's a lot less volume, and there's no stress on it, because it's like you're just going to work up to a daily max on this variation, and there's no stress to try to hit some number that's kind of out of your realm for the day based on how you're feeling. I used to always be like a workout junkie too, and thinking that like 6 or 7 days was better than, you know, 4 or 5. And now I've realized that like 4 is the golden number for me. So I only train 4 days a week, and that's probably where I feel the healthiest now doing that. And yeah, I mean, just kind of knowing my limitations. Like I get beat up sooner than other people. So if I do feel something in my shoulder kind of irritated, then it's like, hey, I'm going to keep it light today. Like I'm not going to push it. let's say of that, because if I do push it, I will feel the effects of that for like 3 to 4 weeks sometimes. So it's just at this point a matter of knowing what works for me and trying to work around it, and realizing at this point that even if I do get irritated, things will get better with time and tolerance and just doing a better job of monitoring that load and volume of what I'm doing and working to tolerance rather than working through pain necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one difference. Before it was, I would just work through pain. And that necessarily wasn't always the best thing. It was like, cause for a while I was just like, screw it. Like, I just have to do this. I love this. I'm going to keep doing it. Where now we're much doing a much better job of managing load. My body kind of knows what it can handle now.
Good, good.
So.
Still do things, basically.
Yeah, I still do a lot. Yeah. And like, I actually just competed a few weeks ago and actually cut down because of the new USAW weight classes. So I cut down from a 94 kilo lifter to an 89 kilo lifter. I actually dropped about 20 pounds for that. And I actually still PR'd even at a brand new low body weight. I put 28 pounds or whatever that is, a little under 16 kilos on my lifts in the past few months. So I'm still lifting, still progressing.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, I think with time, learning your body and how, you know, making smarter decisions in training.
Yeah.
And for rehab and warm-ups and stuff like that, and doing more of the right things and kind of going with it from there. Because, like, still in knowing what I know now and taking a lot of courses and stuff, like, on pain science, like, I took Greg Lehman's course. That was a big one for me. And then as well as Erson Roulihioso of Modern Manual Therapy. He has a pretty cool course I took on spinal manipulation, but most of the course wasn't actually on spinal manipulation. It's on the home exercise programs we can give people for resets that basically take the place of all those spinal manipulations.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of how joint loading can affect the nervous system. And like, you know, you could have elbow pain, and if you just load your neck 20 times to that side, then a lot of your symptoms can kind of disappear. So I do a lot of that stuff now and respecting the nervous system in that essence as well.
Yeah, would you mind giving an example of that actually? Because I'm kind of interested myself.
And
like how would you load the spine for, let's say, the right elbow?
Yes. Well, I mean, it depends on the case, and it's not everyone that falls into this. So this is more of like what we call rapid responders. So some of that though is like, because I do a lot of pole work and stuff, so I will feel, you know, some like medial epicondylitis or whatever you want to call it, you know, tendinopathy type stuff. And
the inside of the elbow hurts.
Yeah, the inside of the elbow hurts. So literally I went through this course and we did some stuff and we looked at my neck and saw that I just deviate. So when I go into extension, I actually deviate a little bit to the right or to the left. So I deviate away from the right side. And so you manipulate that and look at the muscle tone and the change in the kind of neurodynamics, and all of a sudden like your whole arm is feels freer. And then we just did, like, we call it a litmus test, where I did a push up before and after we did the manipulation and it felt better. And then he just had me sit there and side bend 20 times with it. So it's cervical retraction and side bend. And lo and behold, my tendonitis has gone away now. And so is my wrist pain that I had. Yeah. So it's just, the whole thing is the whole self-empowerment of, yeah, you can go to a chiropractor and they can manipulate you 3 times a week if you want, or you can come here once. We can manipulate you too if we want. And then that kind of opens that window of opportunity. And then from there, here are the exercises you're going to do multiple times a day. It's very simple. And that will keep your pain down. as long as you kind of stay on top of the buffer zone. So
not getting into the danger zone.
Yeah, stay out of the danger zone. So, but yeah, it's just literally because all we're really doing when what works with the manipulation is the body has some perception of threat, and that could be kind of pushed downstream to, you know, distal structures. And if we just load the cervical spine or the thoracic spine, then because we're not unlocking a joint or anything, we're just taking it past its what it realizes is in physiologic range and pushing it to the barrier. So the joint gets loaded. And when that joint gets loaded, the perception of threat is down and pain goes down.
Cool.
So I've put a lot of that into my warm-ups as well as just how I treat patients now. Because it does work, and I've realized a lot of things are just proximally based issues, especially upper quarter that stem from the cervical spine.
Yeah, so I was on Netflix the other day, and and I was like, I heard about the Motley Crue documentary movie.
Yeah, he has it.
Yeah, Mick Mars, which I didn't know, but I've been a Motley Crue fan for a while, but I had no idea that he had it. And I was reading up on it, and for a while, like whenever they stopped touring and the band broke up, he was messed up. Like, he wasn't doing anything, and he was addicted to painkillers. And they went to visit him to try to get the band back together. And I was reading this article, and it said he was getting interviewed in 2008, right? So this is like 30 or so years in to him having it. And he said, nowadays it's not so bad, but back when I was high on all that stuff and Motley was having a break, I knew if I didn't stop, I was going to die. In the end, I had to go to a neuropsychiatrist to straighten me up. And he said to me, just hold the guitar for an hour a day. Don't play it. Just hold it. It was pretty bizarre, but I got through it. And in the end, I think I'm actually a better player because of it. So, like, if we're talking behavioral therapy, this dude's a freaking... this dude's a rock star, like literally a rock star, and he couldn't play the guitar, but, you know, to some degree, holding the guitar for an hour is going to work your muscles. But, like, I think he was in what we've been talking about, like that cycle of thinking that he couldn't do it, and then holding the guitar kind of, like, conditioned him to – you know, say to himself, okay, this isn't that bad. I can do it. Similar to how you doing a snatch feels pretty good on your spine right now. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It hasn't exploded yet, and I don't have that fear anymore that it will.
So are you a rock star?
I do play drums, actually. I played in a band for a long time.
But... oh, well, you're totally, I think you're a rock star.
Thanks, Will. But no, I definitely think it's like not letting, you know, the regular medical model kind of get in your way of what's going on and letting you do what you do, whatever you want to do. Like, nothing should be off limits, I don't think. And that's kind of something I always put into how I practice now. You know, whatever you want to do, we're going to get you there. It's just a matter of how. And maybe we need to modify some things for a bit, but, you know, I'm never going to arbitrarily tell someone, like, stop doing this based on this diagnosis.
Do you think you could take the place of Tommy Lee?
Probably. He's not that good of a drummer, actually.
Or y'all could just start a band called the Ankylosing Spondies. You just need a bass and a singer.
Yeah,
you sing. You could do both. Do you sing?
So, I can. No, you don't want to hear me sing. But if anyone out there is listening that has AS and plays instruments, send me a DM.
We're getting the band together, boys.
So,
I'll be your manager.
All right, that'd be great. We'll need one of those. But yeah, are there any other questions you guys have, or?
I think we covered all the good stuff. Joe, do you have anything else?
No. No, I was going to end up making a statement, though, that, like, you know, the typical, you know, healthcare system that you were just talking about, as therapists, you know, we're in this typical healthcare system of, you know, we see somebody and then we discharge them, which, you know, I really don't like. I wish we got to hold on to people much longer, because, you know, earlier in the episode, you were really talking about, like, skill acquisition. And we know so much of that skill acquisition, you know, can take years to develop. And the power it could have to really have a therapist help guiding you throughout this whole time without all the strings and red tape that is attached when entering in the healthcare system, and the ways that we document and what the ways that we are allowed to do things, given that you are in the traditional model or using insurance rather than more of a concierge or cash-based model. So it was just more of a statement, not necessarily a question, but I think as a profession, we really need to strive to really dive into how we can help people more on that aspect to really for the longevity of our clients or patients.
Yeah. So that's actually another big, not a big piece, but something I failed to mention was after a while of me seeing the rheumatologist and stuff for all this garbage that was going on, my mother met some guy that was a cash-based osteopath. Mm-hmm. And she was like, hey, I want you to go and just talk to him. Like, he seems like he's really, like, on the same page as you with, like, training, and he's a younger guy, and I think it would just be good for you to go talk to him. So I went and talked with this guy, and it was an actual formal, like, evaluation and stuff, and we talked about what was going on. And this guy was cash-based, and he spent 2 hours with me.
Wow.
And we did my blood panels and stuff. Like, he took a bunch of other things, and I came back again, and we still spent another hour and a half together. And I was just like, wow. Like, that was the first time I actually had felt cared for within all of the stuff going on. And part of why I ended, like, that kind of inspired me to go cash-based, because it's like, hey, people need your time. And just giving that time and talking and listening, and he was really the first person to be like, hey, he's like, doesn't matter what's going on. He's like, what I really care about is, you know, do you have to, you know, drag yourself by the collar up the stairs to get into my office to maybe make your day a little bit better? Or can you go out there and do whatever you want? He's like, the disease doesn't matter. And he's like, let's look at your blood work and stuff and what you can do on your own to kind of keep things at bay and do what you want to do. He was the first one that didn't try to stop me from doing something. And that's when I was like, okay, like I felt better. Cause someone had kind of validated what I was thinking and told me it was okay. And didn't put this fear into doing something. So that was a big,
now do you thing. Still see him actually? Do you still see him?
I've been meaning to go see him just to kind of check in and see where things are at. Because like for him, that was another big thing for me going cash based with him, was looking at some of the other things that can happen with autoimmune disorders. So I actually, like he did all my blood work and looked at what the other doctor had found. And he's like, yeah, your TSH level, so your thyroid stimulating hormone, is that of like a 45-year-old, like menopausal woman. And your vitamin D, it looks like you live in Antarctica. He's like, the norm is, I think the norm is like 35. I was like a 36. He's like, so you're in normal, so they didn't do anything, but he's like, you're not optimal. So let's just optimize some of those hormones. So we did do, and I still take a lot of like supplements for that. So I, you know, vitamin D, I take this iodine supplement because thyroid function becomes a big issue in autoimmune disorders. Zinc for my progesterone and some other things as well. So, but they're all just natural supplements. But I think the big thing there was really just him kind of validating what I was going through and telling me to not stop doing what I want to do.
Yeah. Right. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Where can the people find you?
So I am on the IG at barbell.therapy. My website is barbelltherapyandperformance.com. and they can email me at Brett with two T's, so Brett at barbelltherapyandperformance.com. I need to make shorter emails, and website name, and domains.
Yeah.
It's still- I wanted people to know we do performance too, and it's not just therapy.
Right.
So I had to put it in the email, the website, everything.
Yeah.
You had to do it.
Yeah. So,
and then we really appreciate you coming on. I think your message to the people that might have this or might have another disease that, you know, they're regulating, but it's still there, thriving and still doing all the things that you want to do. It's powerful stuff. It's a good story.
Yeah, for sure. So,
and it's ever progressing. So mm-hmm. We'll probably have you back on in like 10 years or so. Check in.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do a 10-year check-in. We'll try to get Mick Mars on with me too.
That would be sick.
If he's still alive.
Why don't you shoot him an email and say like, hey, man, I could be your therapist.
I should. I never even thought of that.
I have this too.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to figure that out.
Yeah.
We'll make a docuseries out of it.
Let's do it.
Cool. All right, man.
Well, thanks again, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me, boys.
Have a good one.
Take care.
Heal the world.
You too.
Thank you so much for listening. Follow us for more content on Instagram and Facebook at The Alinea Collective and our website, thealineacollective.com. Additional platforms you can download the podcast include iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Player FM, or wherever else you get your podcasts. New episodes dropping weekly.